detail that you get in, say, writing a piece for a magazine, which is where I came from, is a different language, really. So sometimes you want to put granular detail in, but you find that it's either slowing the movie down or it just seems lurid. So I think the 90-minute documentary, which is the same basic time span as a traditional feature film, is might be more in that oral storytelling tradition where you kind of get your point across and then you can move on, you know, in order for it not to be a boring story.
You know, for some reason, I'm not visualizing the look of the downstairs inner sanctum.
It was a shambles. It was an unfinished basement with cages that were for storage, kind of like chain link.
So it wasn't really decked out in a...
Oh, not at all. Okay. I, in fact, shot a segment for the Today Show in the basement of Studio 54 today.
And when will that be on?
That will be on next week, I think on the 12th.
Okay.
And
so they went with you and you roamed around?
Well, they set up the camera setup was in the basement. Yeah. But the basement is now Feinstein's 54 Below. It's a nightclub, a piano bar nightclub.
Hmm.
And it's decorated like a whorehouse from the 1890s. It's very, very finished.
With
what flocked red wallpaper, and it couldn't be farther from what was really the true ambiance below Studio 54. So there were mattresses down there.
Yeah.
There was old broken furniture that was from the Enchanted Garden, which was the nightclub that Ian and Steve owned previously in Queens. And when they moved all the furniture out of there, they threw it in the basement of Studio, which was free storage, and it became kind of like ad hoc seating for all of the beautiful people that wandered down there to...
That sounds really nice, that kind of distressed that distressed look that some people prefer, you know, not overly made up, not overly
well,
done.
Well, think about it. I mean, a lot of the people that were going down there were very decadent people. They were very rich and fancy decadent people,
yeah.
But people like Yves Saint Laurent,
right.
Who
Halton.
Like to, you know, go into the catacombs of the sex clubs
right.
in Europe. And probably would have thought it was cool to go into a unfinished space where lascivious adventures could be had.
Were there any... you used only a small smattering of news reports, local news reports. Was there any documentaries that happened at the time that I have not seen? I would love to just see as much stuff. Your documentary just excited me to the point I wanted to see as much footage as possible about it.
I'm a kind of a vintage TV news aficionado, so I was shocked that Walter Cronkite was covering Steve Rubell and Ian Traeger. I mean, that was a big deal then. There were three nightly newscasts, and they were 30 minutes. So to take up real estate on a network nightly newscast was a big deal. And Cronkite was the most prestigious at that moment. So I wanted that in, and the local news in New York, which always had a great flavor to it in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, there was like a great kind of hard-boiled glamour to even the local news in New York, they covered it incessantly. So I very carefully selected the news clips and which anchor people were on, and I knew who they all were because of my strange obsession with this period and that form. So I hand-curated all of that. There were no documentaries of the period about Studio. They were later, really. They were behind the music, which might have been the 80s.
Okay. What's the book version that everybody respects? Isn't there a book version?
There are a few books.
A history, an oral history of some sort. I was speaking to Michael Musto at the screening.
Oh, yeah.
He said, have you seen it? He said, oh, my God, I went there how many hundreds of times. I don't need to see it.
Michael's
you should see it. You should see it.
Well, that's Michael's a friend of mine. That's nice.
It's good. You know, you should see it. Really can't tell me anything. I know everything.
Yeah, he's very jaded. Love him. So, Studio 54, there was a book called The Last Party written by Anthony Hayden.
That's what he mentioned.
Yeah.
And he's in that.
It's pretty thorough.
Okay.
Because Ian never really spoke before now, I don't think there's anybody that has Ian's voice in their book about Studio 54.
But Ian believed all these years when he didn't speak that he would, you know, somehow be throwing shade upon himself, somehow diminishing his credibility or his respectability as a hotelier and an entrepreneur, and he didn't want to go there.
Yeah, I think being a ex-convict and being a CEO of a major real estate development corporation don't go together in in the culture very well. So I think he was very protective of his reputation and also personally embarrassed and ashamed. So he, I think, was taking the ostrich approach and just burying his head in the sand.
Right. I had a friend who I knew in he was a very, very, doing very well as a drug dealer in Boston, and he knew me at the time. I mean, we were friends before, but we also. And he was popped finally for he was smuggling in Vietnamese heroin and a lot of weight. And basically, we went down to Norfolk, which is where Albert DeSalvo and other, you know, it's a fairly serious prison. I visited, you know, I visited him like 3 times. And then visited him when he got out. Ever since that was over, that period was over, he doesn't want to talk to me.
Right.
Same syndrome, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to deal with any of that, including people who are friendly with me.
Right. Yeah, I think Ian wanted to leave it behind.
Mm-hmm.
People don't remember that there was a fall. I think people remember the rise, and they remember the club itself. And I think one thing I've observed that surprised me is a lot of people don't remember Ian from that period at all, because he was the invisible man.
Yeah.
Steve was all out front. Ian was all behind the scenes. And I think in a way, Ian felt that he, because he didn't get the limelight then, he could kind of play it off. People in the know in New York all know that he was involved, and I think he had to kind of fight to get his recognition and social acceptance back, which, again, if you know anything about New York, must have been a very painful experience. New York's a very unforgiving city. Like Hollywood, in a way, the greatest sin is to fail. If you succeed and you do dastardly or criminal things, then you can still survive, but if you fail and you're caught, could be a really grim scenario. But
well,
he's
didn't
also
really fail. They were just careless, right? They didn't fail.
Well, they
we're
lost.
Talking
they
about
lost
them.
The club.
But here we are, you know.
No, in the long run, I think, much to his surprise, that it's probably the thing he'll be remembered for.
Yeah.
And I think that that's why he wanted the presidential pardon. Because I think he knows that in the end, co-founder of Studio 54 will be the first thing people say when they talk about Ian Schrager in the future.
Mm-hmm. It's really, in today's world, my favorite, at least has been, was Ninth Avenue. I loved the restaurants and whatnot, and after a play or something. But there was a time, obviously, as the movie brings up, when 8th Avenue was considered a little dodgy as far as a place to go.
Right.
I can't believe that. It was one block away, right adjacent to Tin Pan Alley, and it was literally considered not a place you necessarily wanted to go to.
It was all peep shows and prostitution, and it was that kind of old honky-tonk Times Square North, really. It's amazing that something 6 blocks from Central Park in the middle of Manhattan would be considered a no-go zone.
Yeah.
The world has really changed a lot.
There was a repertory cinema there in the early 80s.
Oh, yeah?
81, something like that.
Oh.
Didn't last very long, but I was an editor of a magazine called A Thousand Eyes Cinema Guide. Basically, I covered all the repertory cinemas in
there. Oh, wow.
And I remember, wow, this is good. You know, this is healthy, culturally, you know.
It was right in the middle of all the peep shows?
It was around 44th, 45th, something like that.
Was it the Thalia, or was that far
uptown? No, that's
uptown?
Like 95th.
That was way uptown. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
No, it was brief. It was like 6 months or 8 months, but it definitely was. I remember seeing From Here to Eternity with a girlfriend there once.
Oh, that's crazy.
Anyway.
Well, New York was more mixed and interesting.
Yeah. And there were poorer people there, and it was a better place culturally, I think.
Yeah, well, it's adjacent to Hell's Kitchen, so yeah. That was a poor neighborhood.
Yeah.
And it was until not that long ago not a great neighborhood.
Now, I can read this by buying the Anthony Hayden Guest, which I've never actually read, but were they in the same joint when they went to jail?
Yeah, they were. They were first in the Tombs in Lower Manhattan.
This is a way station, isn't it?
Yeah, because they had to be kept there because there was a federal investigation into the allegation that Hamilton Jordan had snorted cocaine.
Oh, yeah.
So they were kept at the Tombs to be on hand in case they needed to give depositions, which actually was unfortunate because the Tombs is a kind of way station, and the food and the conditions there are terrible. There are a lot of rats and cockroaches because it's underground in Manhattan.
Yeah.
They eventually were shipped together to Alabama, I think.
Okay.
I can't remember the name.
Federal
prison in Alabama, which was kind of a country club prison. And they did request to stay together, and they were kept together.
Really? They shared a cell?
No, they were shared in the same prison. They didn't share a cell.
So you didn't get into that at all?
No, Ian says it briefly at the end. He says, we didn't share a cell, but we were in the same prison.
Right.
And that was, he says, I don't know what I would have done without the benefit of having Steve there. And then he says that he paid off their neighbor in the Tombs who had killed someone with a bowling ball to protect them.
Uh-huh.
They gave his money, they gave his wife money on the outside.
Oh, wow. Okay. That was a pretty great time for gay culture, as we all know, and that was one of the first places that was safe for gay culture. And in New York, certainly, there was being out was not exactly a daring act in the late 70s. And yet Steve was very, even with think of the nightly encouragement to just be, you know.
Yeah. I think people lived in silos then. I was a little kid, so this is just my observations and my research sense, but I think you could live a dual life where you were out to your out friends and you were in to your in friends, and that people might have suspected, but that's the way the world was still structured. It had much more to do with the 1950s America than with the now. And New York, sure, was having a gay moment in the 70s, but think about a lower middle-class kid from Brooklyn, Jewish. You're not really going to be out to your family, quite frankly.
What was the neighborhood that he came from again?
I can't remember. It was one of those, like, very far out.
But they knew each other in Brooklyn, yes? I mean, as
they
teenagers.
They knew of each other, I think, yeah. They were from neighboring parts of Brooklyn.
Bay Ridge, would that be? No.
I can't. They're like, it was one of those very particular parts that's still not gentrified.
Yeah. Well, something that I was going to ask you about the, is there a, I asked you this about Scotty too. Have you done a commentary track, and is that something that's going
to
be on?
I'd love to. I think Ian and I should do one together.
That'd
and
be great.
I don't know yet. And I didn't end up doing one for Scotty. I offered, and it never happened. I was dying to do it for Scotty. I thought that would have been amazing.
Now, the thinking amongst a lot of distributors now is streaming, not necessarily physical media.
No, everything's a DVD so far. No one has denied the DVD. I'm so old-fashioned. I love theatrical documentaries. I want them all to be theatrical. Yeah. I actually really care. I very much look at my weekend number, and I've, knock on wood, I've always been number one specialty. Every film so far has been number one specialty for its weekend. I don't know who our competition is this Friday. But I just think...
Well, what about Blu-ray if it's going to be DVD? Is that...
Yeah, maybe I have to ask about the Blu-ray.
Okay.
I really would love to do a commentary for both, especially Scotty. I'd like to do it... We should do an anniversary Valentino DVD with Valentino, Giancarlo, and I doing commentary about how much we fought while we were making the movie. That would be hilarious, actually. I loved that stuff.
Yeah.
I learned so much from the Criterion DVD extras. And that stuff's so precious. And I think it's really terrible that that's going away. By the way, DVDs are still the best way to see a movie at home. And the best way for people, for the press to see it, too. Like, links are a disaster. It's awful.
I absolutely worship the Steven Soderbergh discussions that he had with Mike Nichols.
Yeah,
like on the.
No, that stuff's almost better than some of the movies. You know, and when a movie's not a success, but the director is talking about it and giving commentary, I think that's even more interesting.
Yeah,
because like, great directors make unsuccessful films. Doesn't mean they're bad films, but all of that film nerddom that was found a home on DVD extras is something that I love.
And the famous Soderbergh Lem Dobbs.
Yeah.
On the Limey.
Yeah.
Where Dobbs blames him for.
No, that stuff. I mean, that happens on podcasts now occasionally. Like, that's why I like the Bret Easton Ellis podcast, because it's almost like a DVD extra.
Yeah,
right. He gets combative with people, and it's like I like that. That's where creativity happens, where people start to be contemplative a little bit. It's nice.
Is there anything happening this weekend in New York? I presume you're going to the IFC Center sometime.
I am. Ian and I will be there at 7:30 on Friday.
Okay.
If you want to come.
I'm going to be at the Hampton Center.
Oh, is that now? Okay.
I'm going to go out there tomorrow morning.
What's the opening night?
I was sort of hoping you guys would go out there anyway, even though it's opening.
We didn't...
Because, you know, how many people out in the Hamptons have even
this is
seen
made
it, right?
for the Hamptons.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. This is, that's the prime. They're all there.
Yeah.
I did Aspen Film Festival last week, and that was also, it's like between Aspen Film Festival and Hamptons, that's the constituency.
Sure. Yeah. Well, this is going to be a perennial. You didn't ever happen to know Steven Sabin, did you? We had talked about him briefly.
I talked to him on the phone a few times, I think.
Okay.
I think I got him. I think I talked to him about writing for Vanity Fair. I knew those guys. I knew Musto, Sabin a little, and George Wayne. Those middle period New York, kind of like rag writers.
I ran into Seth Kagan, who used to write for the Soho Weekly News when Sabin was the columnist, Detail, and before Details.
Right.
And he and his wife Marta have been living in Telluride for years now. And he is currently running for councilman or some kind of, you know, he's literally going door to door and talking to the, you know.
That's cool.
Doesn't expect to win because it's, apart from the blue dot of Telluride, it's a very red area.
Oh yeah, of course.
You know.
That's interesting. I mean, the people that left New York are interesting. Including me. I mean, I moved here and I don't live here anymore.
So besides San Francisco, New York, and Los Angeles, no other big cities? What about Europe?
Oh, no. The expansion will be nationwide. Okay. I don't know what the cities are yet. So it'll be as broad as we can make it.
And I would presume that the 54 legend is well known throughout Europe.
Yeah, I think international will be strong. I find, actually, international interest among people I meet is bigger than American in a lot of ways. It's really...
Younger people today who never...
I think there's a constituency of younger people for sure. I think we'll see if they show up at theaters, but anyone that knows or cares anything about music or nightlife certainly knows about it and probably has a curiosity because they never were there. Mm. I mean, that's really, for me, I never went. I was too young. I wasn't in New York. I knew people who went, and they talked about it a lot. So for me, it was always about, well, what did it feel like to be there? Mm. And that was one of my goals for making the film, was to...
That shot where you go in.
Yeah.
And you got that from where? Where
we did that? Found that, actually. It was found footage, and then we did some specialty shots of the existing hallway,
okay,
and distressed them and cut it together. So we kind of like pieced it together that way.
And it has been back to being an actual theater.
Yes.
Which means that they restored the grade. The rake.
Yeah, right? The rake has been put back in.
R-A-K-E?
I think that's how it is, okay. Rake, yeah. Yeah, I was there the other night. I went, by chance, someone brought me to a play and it was there.
I went to Waiting for Godot there about 5 or 6 years.
But actually, before it became Roundabout Theater, it was the place that Cabaret was revived with Alan Cumming.
Mm.
And they set it up like a cafe.
Nice.
So it was called, I think, Cabaret at Studio 54. That was the first time I'd been in the building.
Huh.
And I actually, it occurred to me, actually, if people knew that it was still there, mm-hmm, and it still looks virtually the same,
mm,
I think it would be a tourist attraction. I just don't think people realize. I think most people just assume it was torn down years ago, but it's all there. It's really interesting, actually. One of my favorite things that we shot was actually bringing Ian back to studio. He hadn't been back since he walked out the last night that he owned it. And it was very haunting.
The night before they went to jail.
Well,
right?
Yeah, exactly. They had the party, the last party, and he went to prison the next day. But he hadn't returned since then. So that was very interesting. But he's standing in the vestibule of the back door where he was seized by the feds and giving a stand-up interview there. And for me, that kind of verite filmmaking, when the principal player is still around and the space still existed, that's very exciting for dogs for me. I'm not a big fan of bringing people back to the street they grew up on. That, I think, is a cliche of documentaries that we could possibly dispense with.
Yeah.
But this was the scene of the crime, and I thought that was really interesting, that the space hadn't really changed. It was almost the same.
Now, I'm pretty sure you don't explicitly get into this, but did they ever sit down at any time early when they realized it was going to be huge and say to themselves, look, we have this pirate attitude, we're going to skim.
Right.
But we have to be reasonable about it.
Right.
We have to, you know, try and do it so we can get away with it.
Right.
Did they ever have that conversation?
I know a couple things that aren't exactly that, but Ian told me that they were going to clean it up, but they didn't. And it just happened too soon, the raid. That they were actually thinking, because they're not stupid. I mean, they acted stupidly, but they're not stupid people. That, geez, this is so big. We're making so much money. Why don't we try to clean this up somehow? He didn't elaborate.
Mm.
Of course, they didn't do it, and they were raided and caught, and I have no idea whether.
What about that hard-nosed guy who's sitting next to Ian, I guess, or somebody, and he's saying, actually,
partner.
We owed a lot more, it cost a lot more, that guy.
He was a silent partner who turned them in when everyone was arrested. He turned state's evidence.
Because they were going to put him in jail if he didn't...
That's right, he had a family.
Right.
Ian and Steve didn't. Mm. But there was another component to this that I thought was interesting, actually. What is it?
Well, basically, they said, yes, let's be smart about this, but they didn't get around to it.
They didn't get around to doing it, which just seems very them from the time. And then I think, on the other hand, the feds said, the fed who busted them said to me, and this is in the film, that if you're going to skim 10%. They were skimming 80%. Don't be pigs about it. I just think that's such a great line. it's so matter of fact and so commonsensical. You know?
And was it really a single interview in which Steve said we're making as much money as the mafia? Wasn't that the
yeah, that was the Dan Dorfman piece, legendary piece in New York Magazine, with the cut line of the photo even was only the mafia does better, which is pretty
just like waving a red flag to the
pretty brazen. Can I ask you what time it is, because I'm on the schedule?
I've got 20 up.
20 of 5. Okay. Yeah. Well, can we do 5 more minutes and then we'll, okay.
Well, I'm. I guess my only thing that I wish there'd been a tiny bit more of was more catty stories about overweight Elizabeth Taylor. And, you know.
Yeah. I mean,
all the little meaningless stuff that doesn't address.
Yeah,
the richness,
I mean,
of it,
I think
you know?
See it in some of the photos. I do like, and I'm glad we could put in that Ron Galella sequence where he's kind of giving you the caddy stuff.
Yeah.
I like that. I think people sitting in a chair being talking heads, being caddy, is a little risky sometimes. Because it's sometimes it could be embarrassing to them even. And I don't... I feel like when you cross a line and you cross the line into cruelty, not a hard hitting's fine, but making fun is, I think, a really dangerous line to cross in a doc, especially of your subject. I don't think we come close to that in this, but I. There are a million stories at Studio 54, and we only had 90 minutes to tell a fraction of them.
Did you determine that you were going to keep it tight to 90?
I like 90 minutes.
Yeah.
I feel like filmmakers who go push 100 are really asking their audience to indulge them in a way that is generally inappropriate.
You know, since seeing your film last January for the first time, I had not really listened to the lyrics and really got into... the closing song,
Young Hearts.
Young Hearts Run Free.
That's
actually a pretty great song.
That's
to
a
end
beautiful
with.
Song, yeah.
And that was pretty big back then.
Yeah, that's why we chose it. It was every song in the movie was literally played at studio. It was actually played there. I'm not a music expert by any stretch, but I leaned heavily on music supervisors and consultants to make sure that everything was authentic and not the obvious disco choice. And some people are saying to me, I love the score, was great, thank you for using those connoisseurs' cuts, they're flawless. Real music experts have told me that, and I'm very happy to hear it. Uh-huh. And then occasionally you do hear, it's like, there's not enough disco in it. So it's like, I don't know, I can't please everyone. I think people want to hear the Village People, and I didn't.
So. What's the, for those that are not going to have the fun, the true fun of seeing it theatrically, which I intend to do at least a couple more times, when is the streaming going to begin?
I don't know. Zeitgeist will know. Hmm. I think they'll do the proper window, though. I think it's at least 60 days. Yeah. Exactly. Scotty streamings October 23rd and November 2nd for the windows, the two windows.
So do you anticipate being a 2 documentary per year guy for the rest of
I'd love it. 2 feature docs a year. I mean, you don't want to exhaust the market.
You got anything in mind what you want to do?
I'm doing Roy Cohn now.
Oh, we are? Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. Great.
I'm doing Roy Cohn now. So I wanted
How far are you into that?
We're cutting.
We're cutting.
Yeah. It's funny, you can make two. Well, Scotty took several years to make. This was faster because it was studio funded.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then sometimes, like, there's an air traffic control thing that happens with the distributors. So 2 a year, whatever. Sometimes at Vanity Fair, I'd have 3 features in 1 issue, you know, and I could have written one of them 2 years before, and it just happened. It's the way it works. But, feature docs are my passion, so I want to keep making as many as possible.
And what kind of footage of Cone, interview footage with Cone that you got that hadn't been seen?
We have never before heard tapes, audio tapes, and we've found some exclusive footage as well, and then we've done deep dives into archive and found never before seen film as well.
He was a very crusty, tongue belligerent guy when you, depending upon how, what you were talking about, but he had these moments of doubt and pain towards the end.
Well, he was a very hypocritical person, maybe the most hypocritical character of the 20th century.
Right.
And he was dying of AIDS, not admitting that or his homosexuality, which is one thing when you're living a private life, but when you're persecuting gay people as part of a McCarthy-like witch hunter, then I think you have... something to answer for. And
were you allowed to interweave Angels in America footage at all?
We might. We would pay. We pay or fair use as the law will allow us to do. I should probably wrap
up. If you keep it to a certain number of minutes, or
fair use is a very complicated legal doctrine that your lawyer has to kind of write a brief for. But it's a very a godsend for doc filmmakers because licensing music and film is so prohibitively expensive, and doc budgets. There's one price list. They don't discern between features and docs, and feature films can afford huge price tags, and docs just generally can't.
Did you have a chance to talk to Tony Kushner or to Mark Harris about it?
I haven't talked to Mark Harris, but we're in touch with Tony Kushner.
So when might continue to be seen? Sundance?
We're working as fast as we can. I hope next year, ASAP next year.
All right.
Thank you. I'm sorry I have to run. I need to go get ready and do another phoner. But this is lovely to see you. Lovely to see you in person.
Yeah.
Thank you for being so interested. I really appreciate it.
Big passion.
Let me put this on my room.
Okay.
Hang on one second. All right.